Radio Langa.
Yes, as promised, it is time for our interview with the bishop. So Joshua Mabonga, also called Mbonga Yashua the Third, Mara Rush, and a creative powerhouse, is a South African musician, motivational speaker, Pan-Africanist, businessman, and ordained bishop of the Pentecostal and evangelical communities. Although many know him more as a spiritual leader, Joshua Mabonga is actually also an experienced business executive. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Langa. You are speaking to Kwezi Wamthembu.
Yebo, kunjani lechithi kuhle?
Ngiyaphila njani isikhulu?
Hayi.
Bishop, so you are known to, in a way, always know how to respond to any and every question or statement. Or do you ever find yourself deciding that the best reply is to hold back your response? So uhlezi unempendulo, or sometimes you would hold back?
It's not as easy.
Yeah.
And it's not as easy to always reply people.
Yes.
But what you do is that you need to develop a strategic way of thinking.
Oh, yeah.
So I've developed something that I call a thinking tool.
Thinking tool, yes.
Which assists me to process lots of information very quickly.
Yeah.
And be able to come up with an appropriate response to whatever issue that I will be asked upon.
Yeah.
So if you have a pen and paper with you there, I can take you through the exercise.
I wish we had that much time, but you know, radio and time, it says no more.
Now. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
So yeah. What is your threshold for small talk? Because usually maukhuluma nabantu, we're always talking about very, very important things and things ezibalulekile nje in terms of developing one's mindset. So if somebody comes to you with small talk, like, what is your threshold? Do you just stop them there and there, or do you let them speak their mind?
Small talk for me is my fashion, is my music, it's my artwork, it's my things that keep me excited and happy and young. And that's small talk.
You know,
the bit of music, how to play mbiras and nyatitis, African landscapes of information, but small talk, even in small talk, you can still have big ideas in small talk.
Yeah. So if I was to come to you and want to talk about the weather the whole day, would you let me?
Talk about the weather?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe how we can influence to change it. Maybe
nice.
We can have enough.
Nice.
But not train smash where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
You'd rather spend time with me to learn my ways.
Yes.
And then my words will come to you.
Yeah. And then, Bishop, you find out that Africans are often being pulled in different directions when it comes to spirituality, Africanism, beliefs, etc. And it's noteworthy the number of young people who are turning to or back to African spirituality as the years progressed. What would you attribute this to? And would you perhaps say we are living in the tone of spiritual awakening?
There is a breeze in the air for African renaissance in terms of Africans coming back to themselves. And I think the greatest danger has been that we have always thought of marketing ourselves to the world.
Yeah.
And trees don't do that. Trees sit at one place.
Yeah.
Fruit, and those who want the fruits, they come here.
Mm.
So I don't know who told the African that he can become a pot plant that can be moved around in other people's ideologies. Mm. We needed to find an establishment of our mindset, political honesty, religious honesty,
yeah.
And let those conversations be solid on the ground. Then when other ideas and whims of change come upon us, they should find us established.
Yeah. So in your answer there, I'm just thinking, Guti, that's perhaps where the whole analogy of roots comes from. Guti, if you have your roots firmly on the ground, you won't be moved around.
That's very important, and I think you hear me well.
Mm.
That unless we want to become portable chaff that is just being blown by the winds of change,
yes.
Our only solution is to find our foundation solid and strong.
So can we maybe have a brief explanation of Sankofa/Umoja?
Sankofa is a Ghanaian concept.
Yes, sir.
Brilliant Ghanaian concept of a bird that is looking back on its tail, or looking back at its eggs. But the whole idea is looking backwards at the future. I hope you can catch the contrast there. You're looking backwards, definitely, but you're looking at the future.
Yes.
All it means that it's the best illustration is of a man sitting in a boat, this small little traditional boat.
Yeah.
And he's rowing his boat. He's looking where he is coming from.
Mm.
But he's going where the boat is going. In other words, the front, keep your eyes on the back,
yes,
while you're moving forward.
Yeah. So you won't forget where you come from.
So where you come from gives you direction to where you're going.
Most definitely. And then in as much as we have gone back to ourselves, for lack of a better word, but then we find ourselves picking and choosing in what parts of our culture we take with us.
Mm.
So how do we retain African identity if we as black Africans leave out certain parts of what strongly comes with our roots or nature?
Yeah, that you're posing something very important.
Mm.
Because that pick and choose, then it will always mean that we are strong in parts of our culture and we're weak in the other side.
Yes.
Because it's like a person who grabs someone's computer and then leaves the password behind. You may have the hardware, but without the access codes.
Yeah, it's
I wish we can understand that the whole African mindset is a tapestry of a well-engineered mindset, brain, which protects economy, family, and etc.
Yes.
And when we begin to tamper with the passwords of the tradition, picking and choosing, we might end up running and we have left the switch behind.
Yeah. And then on that same analogy of the computer, because now we have young ones that we are raising, how would you say would be the best way for us to take the programming that we have, considering that you are a proud African and you are very firmly on your roots? How do we take that programming and instill it on the little ones so that they don't lose their way while they are growing up?
The first one I can share with you is our appreciation of African art and traditions. You look at the Ndebele drawings, look at the Zulu beadwork, look at the Xhosa beadwork,
yes,
look at our crafts and etc. There are some technologies and sciences,
yeah,
diagrams, symmetries, architecture, medicine, you know, weather patterns, tribal inclinations, all of those things inculcated in pieces of our traditional art.
Yeah.
When you therefore look at our art form, it becomes our library.
Yes, sir.
Of the information from the previous generation to the next generation. So my first advice would be for the young people, get involved in indigenous arts.
Yes.
Understand those diagrams and symmetries, two boxes there, a triangle there.
Yeah.
When you see a diamond on a piece of African art, what does it mean?
Mm.
Those are cultural dynamics, those are family inclinations, and quite a lot of anthropological and historical information is stored,
yeah,
in our African culture, and the young people would do well to acclimatize themselves.
Yeah, because back in the day we didn't have a pen and a pad or an iPad or a laptop, so I think the best way we could capture what was happening at the time is to inscribe it in a rock somewhere.
On the contrary, we had a pen and we had paper.
Yes.
That's why we have these things. They were written down.
Yeah.
They were drawn. So you cannot say we did not have.
We had.
And we had pen and paper.
It might be
so
different.
So if you walk up into the caves right now in Zimbabwe and parts of South Africa, you find the Bushmen were writing.
Yeah.
So you can't say they had no pen and paper.
Yeah, they were.
It's written.
And then shifting to the concept of civilization, is it possibly, or in hindsight, truly a weapon of mass destruction?
Civilization is not, it's overrated.
Mm.
Real civilization is preservation.
Mm.
I wrote a paper some few months ago entitled The 7IR,
yeah,
7th Industrial Revolution, which was seeking to throw mud on the face of the 4th Industrial Revolution.
Yes, sir.
And I wanted to project myself into the future and say, what is the 4th? What is the 5th, what is the 6th, and what is the 7th?
Yeah.
And I discovered that the Bushmen, the Aborigine, and the Hottentots in the jungles, they're actually living on the 7IR. I'll make it simpler.
Yeah.
It is a civilization where you manufacture nothing.
Okay.
You own nothing. and you have everything.
All right.
So if civilization means putting more concrete jungles,
yeah,
what quality of air are we going to be breathing?
Well, because now
what quality of food are we going to be eating? We're going back again to uncivilized. People are drinking sewage water now.
Yeah.
Is that civilization?
Yeah, because in as much as you are saying you are improving the quality of life, you're actually destroying the quality of life at the very same time.
Yeah, even our lifespan, to say the least, our mortality rate is not getting better.
Yeah.
Our forefathers lived 110, 120, 96, 80 years. Now modern children can hardly live up to 30, 40. If you look at some young boys at the age of 50, 30, they look like it's a second-hand car from the scrapyard.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think that has to do with the kind of nutrition or the foods that we take, the quality of the water that we drink. Because as we're saying, back in the days, they would live up to like 100 because I think their nutrition was up to par.
If you measure civilization in the backdrop of mortality rate, can you say we're getting civilized?
Definitely not. Yeah. And then, can just finish up that sentence.
Yes, because I was saying in that case, then you find that a baboon who is living in the jungle is living in a cleaner, healthier environment, eating better, drinking better water than a young boy staying in Sandton on the 18th floor in a penthouse.
Yeah.
He's eating junk.
Yeah.
He's breathing junk. And who has got a better quality of life?
So the boy is 30, but he looks 65 now.
There you go.
So do you think the current narrative of Ubuntu needs to be corrected? Or do we need to go back and fully understand what it was meant in the first place?
Firstly, we need to define that white people are not Abantu. Yeah, because these are not the children of Mtu.
Yes. Or Kwantu.
Yes, Bantu.
All right, yes.
Buntu.
Yes.
So umuntu ongena buntu yinto.
So but you can't say
as such whites who don't have Ubuntu have become into. How do you know what he lay into?
Mm.
It's a person who comes in your house and then chases away from your house, rapes your wife and children, and then decides to look after you after he has raped you. And then that's sadistic. I na buntu lento. He's into. That's why in the olden ways they never called them abelungu. They were being called abelombi.
Okay.
Abelombi, which means sorcerers of the soul. People who take away other people's spirits to manipulate them for their own good. So that's witchcraft.
And then just moving right along, Africans are being governed with Latin origin or rather Western laws. Would you say is it effective at all, or is it possibly systemically designed to favor the black African?
You can buy a Samsung phone and you download an Apple software.
Is
it won't work.
Yeah.
And as such, an African trying to use Western methodologies of governance, it won't work. The best picture I can give you, because some of your people are actually Christian, it will be to share with you the David story going to fight Goliath.
Yeah.
And he was trying to put on the clothes of Saul to go and fight Goliath. And until he learned how to remove those clothes and dress himself in a way that was familiar to him, could he begin to face the challenges ahead of him? And I think Africa needed to start finding out exactly what kind of expertise do we have when we're getting into the Goliath terrain.
We basically need to go back to ourselves.
You can't say it better than that.
Nah.
You cannot face Goliath with Saul's clothes.
Yeah, because you're not Saul.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in your view, is it too late to start developing a new system that recognizes the existence and nature of Africans? And would you say that it can or cannot appeal to the current government? And would they even consider an integration between what is the law for now and indigenous governance at the least here?
The problem is that Africans are the ones who are always negotiating their part of the table. The Chinese don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Because they own their Chinese culture and own their economy. The British does not have a problem with that. He owns his economy, he owns his language, he owns his currency.
Yeah.
The American has no problem with that. It's you Africans who constantly undermine the issue that without geography,
yeah,
without a physical address, without land. I'd like what Sisulu said a few days ago, which is causing waves in South Africa.
Yeah.
For the first time after Mandela's death, we've had the first official statement that politics is a waste of time without an address, which is land.
Yes, sir.
And without land, you can't practice African spirituality. That's where I'm driving to.
Yeah.
Because you need your rivers. You need your mountains. You need your forests for your herbs.
Yes.
You need your food on the ground. So you cannot have African culture and African spirituality in flats.
Yeah.
So.
Speaking of land, I just want to hear your take on a borderless Africa, because most people, the bone of contention is then how are you going to be able to monitor the flow in and out of people in terms of crime and whatnot.
Yeah, that narrative already tells me you're reading your history from the time of colonization, mm-hmm, coming this way, as if we don't have a history for ourselves. The same Van Riebeck narrative.
Yeah.
That the only time you discuss South African history is at the arrival of Van Riebeck.
Yeah.
And when did the African Boer truck, then you start learning from there. Are you saying people were not here before this?
Most definitely.
Are you saying we're not here before this? And how did we manage then?
Yeah.
So due to technology and advancement and the political boundaries, we've created a new problem now of identity that, no, we no longer know where our borders used to be. There are Tswanas in Botswana.
Yeah.
There are Tswanas in Rustenburg. There are Tswanas in Makopane. And where do we put the border of their floor? There are vendors in Zimbabwe. There are vendors in Venda. Where do you put the border? There are Sutus in Free State. There are Sutus in Lesotho.
Yeah.
There are Sutus in Harrismith. Where do you put the border?
Yeah.
There are Ndebeles. They are also like Swazis.
Yes.
Where do you put the border? All of a sudden, when you talk politics now, you don't know how you're going to control the influx. How are you controlling the influx between Mpumalanga and Swaziland?
Yes, and then we just press for time, but then just as a debrief, what comes to mind, and this is drawn from the last question I asked, what comes to mind when looking at the lack of distrust amongst Africans in terms of trade or business? Because most of the time we appear to be more trusting of people of other nationalities than our own Africans. Like, Lobabalo is not going to do what I want him to do, but then if it's another person of color, I'm more trusting. What's your take on that?
You've never seen a movie where an African businessman is trustworthy.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You've never seen a book in classroom where an African businessman is trustworthy.
Yeah.
So how do you educate people on the weaknesses of Africans and hope that they can invest in the efficiency of the Africans? When you read about Shaka the Zulu,
yes,
even in your own books, is he revealed as a military strategist or as a terrorist?
Yeah. So you would say the problem is the conditioning from what we consume.
It's a conditioning from.
Okay.
But it's changing slowly.
Yeah. And then just your parting words, or maybe word of advice to young and old Africans out there. How do we go about in going back to ourselves, in as much as we are now used to this way of living, in a sense that you feel like an outsider whenever you talk about going back to what real African, being African is?
Start with your family history.
Mm.
It's irreplaceable. It's only when understanding where you're coming from in terms of your forefathers, your parents, your genealogies, then you'll understand the DNA of what you are and what you're made out of.
Yeah.
So please just go back to yourself, go and clean up your grandfather's graves.
Yes.
And reconnect with where you're coming from.
Yeah.
You may just have an idea of where you are and have visions and dreams of where you're going.
Yeah. As I said, we are really pressed for time, but then if our listeners and us as well would like to follow you on this, are you on social media? And if you are, where can we find you?
Just type my name, it will appear everywhere.
Oh, you everywhere.
Everywhere. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Bishop, thank you so much for joining us, and then I look forward to talking to you soon enough, because there's quite a lot that we didn't cover with this one interview, but then I do hope you are going to allow us an opportunity again.
Asante sana.
Thank you so much. Do take care.
Voilà.
Yes, that was, yeah, that was the legendary Bishop Maponga. Yeah, just giving us, yeah, that was quite a bit. That was quite a bit. Let's just go into some music, and then we'll come back, and then we'll wrap up.
Radio Langa.